Journey to Topaz, Chapter 1, Strangers at the Door, Page 1. It was only the first week in December, but already Yuki could feel the tingling excitement of Christmas in the air. There was, of course, no sign of snow, for it never snowed in Berkeley except for the winter when she was 6, and a thin flurry of flakes had surprised them all. Yuki remembered how she had run outside, stretched her arms wide, and opened her mouth, thrusting out her tongue so she could feel the snow and taste it, and gather it to her in any way she could before the flakes reached the ground and disappeared. Today looked like snow, for the sky was gray and murky, but only with fog that blew in cold and damp from San Francisco Bay. Yuki stood close to the fireplace with its burning oak logs and lifted her skirt to feel the warmth as she waited for Mother to fix lunch. On such a cold, gloomy Sunday, it felt especially good to be close to a fire and think glowing thoughts about Christmas. Page 2. Wouldn't be long before a tall fir tree with its fresh green forest smell would be standing in the corner of the living room, and the kitchen would be filled with the wonderful scent of Mother's butter cookies. Yuki thought happily of the presents that would soon gather under the tree. She had already decided to get Mother a soft blue chiffon scarf to go with her Sunday church coat, some wool socks for Father, and maybe a tie or a record for her older brother Ken. It was hardest to find something good for Ken, now that he was going to the university. He seemed to live in a changed world and to be almost a different person. He was 18, and suddenly it was no longer football and baseball and basketball alone that fascinated him. He liked girls. "I'm a girl," Yuki reminded him periodically. "Why don't you take me to the movies?" But Ken only laughed. "I like girls over 16," he explained. "You've still got 5 years to go, and besides that, you're my sister. That makes you an entirely different specimen altogether." Yuki sometimes looked at herself in the mirror, wrinkling her nose at the round, full face and the straight black hair that fell to her shoulders. She would push aside her bangs and contemplate the possibilities. How would she look when she was 16 anyway? Not very good, she decided, but she wasn't going to let that bother her, at least for now. "Yuki-chan!" Mother roused Yuki from her reveries about Christmas and then her older brother. "Lunch is ready. Will you go outside and call your father?" Yuki hurried toward the back door, stopping on the way to page 3. "Get some dog biscuits for Pepper." Father was out in the yard, tying up the last of the winter chrysanthemums and burning old leaves. He hadn't been home from church an hour, and already he was hard at work outdoors where he loved to be. Father went to church each Sunday because he believed it was the proper thing to do. He didn't read the Bible each day, as Mother did, and Yuki wasn't even sure he said his prayers every night before going to sleep. In fact, she suspected that if he had had his way, he would have preferred working in his garden on Sunday to sitting in the small, dark Japanese church in Oakland, listening to Reverend Wada, their minister from Japan, and hearing the drone of the reed organ wheezing out the seemingly endless hymns. "You know," he had once said to Mother, "sometimes God seems closer out there in the fresh air, with the flowers and trees, than in this sanctuary." But when he talked like that, Mother wouldn't even dignify his comment with an answer. As Yuki went out the back door, Pepper came bounding up the steps to meet her, barking and wagging his tail and running in circles around her. He knew Yuki had some biscuits for him, just as he knew that Mother or Father or Ken would. They all spoiled Pepper terribly, but in return, Pepper gave them every ounce of love that he had stored in his lively black body. "Down, Pepper!" Yuki commanded, and then, still playing with Pepper, she shouted to her father, "Come on in, Papa. Lunch is ready." Father raised his shears to show that he had heard, but he quickly disappeared again behind the chrysanthemums. Yuki knew she'd have to call him at least 2 more times before he'd page 4 even begin to think about coming inside. She took her time, stopping to peer into the fish pond, stirring the water to see if the big gray carp would rise to the surface. His mouth opened wide, expecting some food. It was a shabby trick, but one that Yuki couldn't resist occasionally, just to see if the old carp was alive and alert. As Yuki studied the murky depths of the fish pond, she heard Mother ringing her small black bell. Mother didn't like shouting to people, so instead she rang her bell, and when she did, it meant that everyone should hurry. Yuki called once more to Father, and then ran inside to wash up and set the table with chopsticks, rice bowls, and teacups. Sunday dinners were usually Japanese meals, and Mother would cook a pot of rice in the morning before church and leave it bundled in a quilt on her bed to keep warm. If guests were coming, she would prepare the night before some chicken, teriyaki, and vegetables cooked Japanese style, with soy sauce and sugar and ginger. Today, however, there were no guests, and Yuki was glad. She wasn't terribly fond of the Japanese students from the seminary, who seemed to cluster under Mother's protective wing. "They're lonely, and they miss their families in Japan," Mother would explain. But Yuki didn't like the smell of camellia oil that lingered on their thick, glossy hair. And she didn't care much for the conversations about the Old Testament or the Sunday sermon. Today, they all had other places to go for Sunday dinner, and Ken had gone off to study at the library. So there were only three of them for dinner. "Good. No company today," Yuki said cheerfully to her canary old salt. Yuki knew that was not the most appropriate name for a canary, but she had given him that name for Mrs. Jameson's sake. Mrs. Jameson was the widow who lived across the street. When her parent old salt had died, she had been so disconsolate that Yuki had been moved to name her own new canary after the parrot. "Why, that's a lovely idea, Yuki dear," Mrs. Jameson had said, and then quickly added, "Now you'll have a salt and a pepper." And she laughed so hard at her own small joke that she got a stitch in her side and had to sit down. When Father came in from the garden, he turned on the radio before sitting down at the table. Then he gave a short, quick grace that fit in nicely just before the voice from the radio filled the room. "This is a repeat of the news bulletin," a newscaster said harshly, his voice trembling with urgency. "Japanese planes have attacked Pearl Harbor. The United States fleet has been heavily damaged. Fires are raging over the waterfront." Father put down his chopsticks and listened intently. Mother brushed away a piece of hair that had strayed from her bun and pinned it back into place. A frown swept across her pleasant face, and she didn't even attempt to eat her lunch. Only Yuki had a mouthful of chicken and sat chewing silently, looking first at Father and then at Mother, trying to understand what had happened. "It's a terrible mistake, of course," Father said at last. "It must be the work of a fanatic. That is, if it really happened." Mother agreed. "Of course," she said, "it must be a mistake. Why would Japan ever do such a foolish thing?" Page six. They sat in silence, listening in disbelief, as the newscaster continued to tell of the attack. Yuki shuddered. The news was like a burden of darkness suddenly blotting out the light of day. Father turned from the radio and saw the frightened look on Yuki's face. He saw Mother's hands tremble as she picked up her cup of tea, and rising abruptly, he switched off the radio. "Maybe it's only a drama," he suggested. "Maybe it is not really news at all. In any case, let's not let it spoil our dinner," he said, trying to smile. And pushing his glasses up on his nose, he turned his attention to the food on the table. Yuki knew, however, that Father was more than a little upset. He always pushed up his glasses when he was disturbed about something, and she knew by his silence that the program had already spoiled his dinner. It wasn't long before the telephone rang, and Father got up to answer it. It was Mr. Toda, one of the men who lived upstairs in the building behind their Japanese church, which served as a bachelor's dormitory. Mr. Toda was a frequent Sunday dinner guest, because Mother said he was old and lonely and needed their friendship. He hadn't come today because he thought he was catching a cold. Yuki liked Mr. Toda better than the seminary students, because he was more open about his feelings. If he liked you, he let you know, and if he didn't, he was equally frank. Yuki liked people like that. She knew that the old man liked her, too. They were both fond of dogs and birds and fishes, and he always had especially pleasant ways of showing his friendship. Whenever he came, he usually brought her small bags of pastel-colored candies that oozed sweet mouthfuls of fruit-flavored juices. Yuki loved the purple grape flavor best and saved those for the last. Page 7. Father told Mr. Toda the same thing he told Yuki and Mother. "It had to be a mistake," he said, over and over. And yes, he would surely keep him informed if he heard anything further. As soon as dinner was over, Father went back to his garden, and Mother went to the kitchen to bake a cake. Mother usually baked when she was going to have company, or when she was too nervous to settle down to do anything else. Yuki didn't care what prompted her to bake as long as she did it. She made the best cream puffs and chocolate cakes of anyone she knew, Mrs. Jameson included. When the doorbell rang, Yuki was sure it must be Michelle Nelson who lived next door. Mimi usually came over on Sunday afternoons to see if she and Yuki could find something interesting to do together. Yuki ran to the door and flung it open, only to find three strange men standing on the porch. They were not Japanese, and looked as though they might be business associates of Father's from San Francisco.
"Is your father home?" one of them asked.
He was not unfriendly, but he did not smile. Yuki nodded. Then she saw two uniformed policemen come up the stairs behind them. "Just a minute," she said unsteadily, and leaving the screen door latched, she ran to tell Mother and then rushed outside to call her father. Father hurried inside and let the men in. He spoke quietly to them and then told Yuki to call Mother. "These gentlemen are from the FBI," he explained calmly. "It seems the news on the radio was true after all. Japan has attacked Pearl Harbor. They would like me to go with them to answer a few questions. They would also like to search, to look, page 8, around the house," Father said. His voice was strained and the color drained from his face.
"But why?" Mother asked nervously. "You have done nothing."
"We have orders to apprehend certain men who work for Japanese firms in this area," one of the men answered briefly. "Your husband, Mr. Sakane..."
"Your husband, Mr. Sakane, is employed by one of Japan's largest business firms."
"I see," Mother said. She was pale and tense.
Yuki could hear the men opening bureau drawers and closet doors. What in the world were they looking for? What did they think Father had hidden?
Soon the men led Father toward the front door.
"I am in my gardening clothes," Father explained. "Permit me to change to my business suit."
The men shook their heads. "There isn't time, Mr. Sakane," they said, and they just gave him time to put on a jacket. Father looked small and frail beside the two large FBI men, and one took a firm grip on his arms as they went down the steps.
"I'll be back soon," Father said, trying to sound casual.
"Don't worry,"
and then he was gone. Two of the FBI men went with Father, and the third stayed behind, sitting down beside the telephone. The two policemen stayed too. One stood at the front door and the other at the back door.
"We won't try to leave," Mother assured them.
But the policemen told Mother they weren't worried about that. "We have orders not to let anyone in," he explained. Although the FBI men and the policemen tried to make polite conversation with her, page 9, Yuki didn't feel the least bit friendly. When they asked her name and how old she was, she replied tersely, "Yuki," and 11. They had taken Father off like a common criminal, and Yuki didn't like it at all.
"Can I go see Mimi?" Yuki asked, looking at Mother, but knowing it was the FBI man who would decide.
"Sorry," he said gently, "but you'll have to stay home a while."
As things turned out, they not only had to stay home, no one could come in or even talk to them by phone. Yuki looked out the window and saw Mimi standing in front of their house, trying to see inside and waving frantically when she caught a glimpse of Yuki's face. She also saw Mrs. Jameson standing on her front porch, peering anxiously in their direction. The telephone rang several times, but to each call the FBI men simply answered that the Sakanes were indisposed and could not come to the phone. It was a strange feeling to be a prisoner in one's own home. Still, Yuki felt no fear, for at the time she had no way of knowing that this was only the beginning of a terrible war, and that her small, comfortable world would soon be turned upside down.